Vayishma Yitro Chohein Midyan Chotein Moshe Eit Kol Asher Asa Elokim LeMoshe Ul Yisrael Amo Ki Hotzi Hashem Et Yisrael Mimitzrayim.
OU Israel presents
Come in. Welcome.
Shalom and welcome to another issue of Torah Tidbits Audio. I'm your host, Phil Chernofsky, and this show is for Parshat Yitro. Recording and first broadcast, Yom Chamishi, Thursday, the 16th day of Shavat, 5772. Yesterday was Tu Bishvat, today is Taz Bishvat, corresponding to the 9th of February, 2012. What else can I say about the time? Yes, of course. Congratulations to the football Giants and all Giants fans who are happy with their Super Bowl victory, as was I here in Yerushalayim and many, many other people here. And condolences to those who rooted for the Patriots, especially to Mr. Kraft, who has a special place in our hearts here in Yerushalayim because of the stadium that he built and the sports that he has encouraged. Okay, Psalm 130, Tehillim Kuf Lamed, Shir Hama'alot Mima'amakim Karaticha Adonai, Adonai Shima V'Koli Tihyena Oznecha Kashuvot L'Kol Tachanunai, Im Avonot Tishmor Yah Adonai Mia Amod. Ki imacha hasalicha lema'an tivare. Ki viti Adonai kiveta nafshi velidvaro hocholti. Nafshi ladonai mi shomerim laboker, shomerim laboker. Yachel Yisrael el Adonai ki im Adonai hacheset v'harbe imo fedut. Vehu yifde et Yisrael mikol avonotav. Achenu kol beit Yisrael hanetunim batzara uvashivya haomedim bein bayam uvein bayabasha. Amakom yirachem aleihem viyotziyem mitzara lirvacha umeafela l'ora umishibud l'geula hashta ba'agala uvizman kariv vinomar amen. I know that I say okay a lot at the beginning of each little piece that I record, but I don't know if I'll try to stop. I don't know, it's somehow has become a signature of mine. Among other things that I probably say that some of the listeners spot. A word about the opening. No, not a word about the opening. It's a theme song. It's not a TV theme song. It's a movie theme song. And I would imagine even people who don't recognize it would be able to give a good guess as to what it is. But I will leave it unspoken. Parshat Yitro, the lead tidbit in hard print this week, and I don't always just parrot the content of Torah Tidbits on this Torah Tidbits audio show, but occasionally I would like to start there, see if it comes out different, see if I am handcuffed to the space requirement in Torah Tidbits, and a little unfettered now that I could talk more about it, or whatever. Somehow, as I was going over the Sedra this week, the mushal, the analogy to marble cake, came to my mind, and I called the lead tidbit, "It's Just Like Marble Cake." In order to be sure that I wanted that analogy, I went to the websites, and found half a dozen marble cake recipe recipes, and pretty much it's what I wanted. A cake batter is made. Half of it, or so, is flavored with cocoa powder. And then you now have two batters, a white batter and a dark brown batter. And you somehow layer them into a baking pan. You could put it by spoonfuls, alternating, folded in. Doesn't matter, two layers, because what comes next is crucial. And that's to take a spatula or some other implement and gently swish around in the batter, not to mix. That's not what you want to do. What you want is some of the chocolate batter to go into the white part and some of the white part to come into the chocolate part. And then when it bakes, you cut a slice and you get that very nostalgic and attractive marble shape, marble texture, whatever you call it. And here is why it came to my mind. If you read the events of the Book of Shemot, Shemot plunged into oppressive slavery, birth of Moshe Rabbeinu, excessive, harsh decrees by Paro by the end of the Sedra, into Vo'era, God's promise, sending Moshe to take the people out, tell them various things, the beginning of the plagues, the first seven of the ten, into Parshat Bo, the remaining three plagues, the events of the first Pesach sacrifice, and the Exodus, into Bishalach, the continuing story of leaving Egypt and then being confronted by the sea and the pursuing Egyptian army, and the sea splitting and crossing through the sea safely to see the Egyptians drown behind the people, and the singing of the song of the sea, and then another miracle 3 days later where undrinkable bitter water was turned to sweet water and drinkable, and then food miraculously falling from heaven. And at the end of Bishalach, the people of Israel are attacked by Amalek in a place called Rephidim. And Moshe tells Yehoshua to gather an army, and a combination of physical fighting as well as prayer by Moshe, Aharon, and Hur assisting, bring about a victory by the Jewish people over Amalek, not a complete victory yet, and God pronounces it as a perpetual kind of battle. And then you go into Yitro, and I want to, for the moment, skip the first chunk of Yitro. Begin with chapter 19. Israel travels from Rephidim, which is where the battle with Amalek was, and they arrive at Midbar Sinai, the Sinai wilderness, and the Torah continues with the preparations for revelation at Sinai and the experience which we call Ma'amad Har Sinai and Matan Torah, and that's pretty much how these sedras, which make up a significant first half of the Book of Shemot. The part that I told you to pull out is a portion which obviously does not belong where we find it in the Torah. It's a story of Yitro, father-in-law of Moshe, who comes with Moshe's wife and two sons to see his son-in-law in action. Yitro is warmly greeted by Moshe and by Aharon, his brother, and by the elders and the people. And then on the following day, the Torah tells us Yitro went out to see his son-in-law in action. What does your son-in-law do for a living? He gets to see it firsthand. And he witnesses Moshe spending an inordinate amount of time judging the people and answering questions and settling disputes. And he suggests to his son-in-law, in the best father-in-law form, that perhaps Moshe should get help, and he should find among the people honorable individuals, intelligent people, knowledgeable people, who will be able to subdivide the population into groups of 10, and then groups of 50, and groups of 100, and groups of 1,000. And all of these people would be in this role of answering questions and settling disputes, except for the very difficult ones, and those would be brought to Moshe, and he would have more time. And God says to Moshe, accept your father-in-law's advice, and Moshe does, and the Torah tells us that this setup was made of Sarei Asara, captains of 10, of 50, of 100, of 1,000 people. And then when that chapter is over, the Torah continues with their arrival from Rephidim, as I mentioned before, at Midbar Sinai, the Sinai wilderness. That portion of Yitro coming is disputed as to when it happened. There are those that say that it actually happened somewhere within the first couple of weeks out of Egypt, and that the second part of it happened later, specifically after the first Yom Kippur, when the second tablets were already brought, which means a lot happened in between all of Sinai experience and the golden calf and the aftermath of that. Or others say the entire episode happened after. Yitro heard what was happening to the Jewish people. He heard about the splitting of the sea. He heard about the attack of Amalek. And he heard about the whole Sinai experience. And he came to be part of these Jewish people. One way or the other, if you pull out that chapter, 18 roughly, and you close the rest of the text together, you will never notice that something is missing. Now, put it back, because that's where it belongs. Now go to the end of Yitro and go to next week's Torah reading of Mishpatim. You will find in the Parsha of Mishpatim a total of 53 mitzvot, out of the 613, a very significant share, which detail day-to-day civil law for the Jewish people and Jewish society. Very down-to-earth, mundane topics, including the law of damages. Your neighbor's dog jumps the fence into your yard and digs up your rose bushes. While he's doing that, he gets scratched by its thorns and incurs an expense for the vet, for the neighbor to pay for the vet. He has a claim against you for harm to his dog. You have a claim against him for your dog's his dog's damage to your rose bush. You go before a court. Now, I'm not going to get into who has to pay whom how much. That's not the point. But that is a sample of what is treated in Parshat Mishpatim. In other words, finished with the lofty, miraculous, wondrous, supernatural, above nature events, and now it's the next day and the day after that, down to earth. However, at the end of Parshat Mishpatim, we see the continuation of the experience at Sinai. And again, you're not talking there mitzvot, you're talking a little bit esoteric kind of stuff, about Moshe ascending alone, but being accompanied in the beginning of his trip, up the mountain, and you get the feeling and the flavor. Ve'el Moshe Amar, Ale El Hashem, and to Moshe was said, go up to God, you and Aharon, Nadav and Avihu, and the 70 elders, and bow from a distance, and Moshe alone should approach, and the people shall not approach. In other words, a continuation of the Sinai revelation and receiving of the Torah. There are different ways of interpreting it, but it is clear that these belong at the end of Parshat Yitro, not at the end of Mishpatim, after the setting down of 53 mitzvot, mostly dealing with civil law. So we have now a problem of a portion that belongs to civil law, the mundane everyday life, back in the beginning of Yitro, and we have part of the story of Sinai experience at the end of Mishpatim next week. I see it in my mind's eye that God put these two stories down and then gently swished and swirled so that the stories should intertwine like marble cake. And if you don't like that analogy, or if you don't like marble cake, think of another analogy if you need to. I very much think of analogies, and that's why I'm going in this direction. The beginning of Parshat Yitro, that portion that doesn't really belong in that spot, is an example of the vanilla, or the white part of the cake, that was swished into the chocolate. And that portion at the end of Mishpatim is the swirl of the chocolate portion of the batter into the white part of the batter. And if you look in Mishpatim, you will see echoes of the content of the Aseret HaDibrot, the Ten Commandments, in an elaborated form, and I see also flecks or swirls or tendrils of the chocolate batter in the white batter of Parshat Mishpatim. And I believe the explanation is an important idea. Judaism is a package deal. It has its esoteric part, it has its miracles, it has its above nature, it has, to use just one piece from these portions, it has its manna that falls from heaven, that is miraculous for various details. But it also has the bread which you bake from the ground, the everyday mundane bread that will sustain the people forever, not just the 40-year experience of the mun. And both types of experiences are part of Jewish experience, and both we need to acknowledge and thank God for. There is no elite subunit of the Jewish people that sit on a mountaintop and ponder the sky and the clouds and subsist on a crust of bread and water and give up all physical benefits and pleasures in order to become spiritual. And we frown upon people who eat, drink, and be merry also. It's a marble cake blend so that when you slice the cake, you will have a pleasant mixture of the chocolate and the white, and not a mixture which is just a light-colored chocolate. But you will have portions that are solid chocolate cake and portions that are regular white pound cake. And it's when you chew them and mix the flavors in your mouth that you get the full mixture. That's Judaism too. I don't think this message could come across any better than by misplacing or displacing one portion from one section and another portion from the other section and basically transposing them. It's a message that comes across. It also carries the message that before you re-experience revelation at Sinai, you need to get your day-to-day functioning, at least in principle, in order, because that is Jewish life. Moshe Rabbeinu says to the people in God's name before the receiving of the Torah, prepare for today and tomorrow. And on a homiletic level, you can say today represents the day that you will receive the Torah, the day that you will hear and see an unnatural sound and blasts of the shofar and fire and lightning and thunder, and the tomorrow, when things will settle down, and you will have to be concerned with all the little mundane things. Can you keep an eye on my bicycle while I go into this store? You come out, the bicycle is gone. What happened to it? Some tough guys came, pushed me over, and took away the bike. Is the guardian of the bike responsible for that, to pay you or not? Mundane. Where does this come together with a mountain smoking and flaming and firing? The answer is, that's Jewish life. That's Judaism. We recite a blessing on a rainbow. We recite a blessing on drinking a sip of water. And we recite a blessing after successfully coming out of the bathroom. That's Judaism. Hold that thought. We'll be right back with more Torah Tidbits audio. Welcome back to part two of Torah Tidbits audio for Parshat Yitro. The short piece of a theme that you heard at the beginning of this half needs really one word to tell me that you know where it's from and why it is chosen for this week. Again, some will get it and some won't, and I don't want to give more hints, but maybe later in the show I will play that same motif, but with the words that introduced the show back in whenever it was broadcast. Speaking of music, which we weren't, I would like to play a piece from an album recorded by David Streicher with his father, Michael Streicher. The piece is Kabed et Avicha ve'et Imecha. It's obvious why it's being chosen this week, being commandment number 5 of the Aseret HaDibrot, honor thy father and thy mother. And I would say that if you happen to have a child who needs reminding, you strap him to a chair and you place headphones on his ears and you play this song to him until he gets the message. I'm just kidding, but use it with discretion. David Streicher. The album is Mizmor LeDavid, Michael and David Streicher, Kabed et Avicha.
Oh, yeah. kabel kabel es avicha es avicha v'yetzinecha kabel 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 es avicha es avicha v'yetzinecha.
As long as we were singing about Kabed et Avicha ve'et Imecha, let's talk a little bit about commandment number 5, honor thy father and thy mother. It seems that many, many cultures and societies throughout history and around the world have taken this notion of respect and honor for one's parents into their own culture. I would even say, I'm sure there are exceptions to this, I mean, I know there are exceptions, but I would say the norm is to honor one's parents. And the question arises, do we need, and why do we need, a command, a mitzvah, an imperative, to honor one's parents? Isn't it natural? The answer is, part of the answer is, that it's natural up to a certain point, and if we want to use a crude dividing line, if the parents have done their job with enthusiasm, with kindness, and raised their children to be good people, then it is the most natural thing in the world to honor them by escorting them and feeding them and clothing them and taking care of them, especially when they get older. However, being a mitzvah in the Torah, it carries with it obligations that go beyond the situation where the person in question deserves them. A child must honor and respect his parents, even if they did not treat him well as a child. The Talmud has an example of a venerable rabbi who was giving a discourse in public, whose mother, who was not in right mind, came to him and spat on him and abused him verbally and I don't know what else. And this rabbi is praised for holding his tongue and for allowing this abuse from his mother because it was his mother. It's not an easy topic, and I don't know if I really wanted to bring it up because it's not so easy. Abusive parents need to be punished, and they need before that to be warned, and they need also even before that to be taught how to be good parents. But that's different from a child's obligation to his parents who brought him into this world. One's father and mother are considered partners with God. You, each one of you, each one of us, came into this world because of a father, because of a mother, and because of God. And if things are ideal, then certainly it would be honoring them with love and respecting them with love. But when things don't go ideally, the backup plan is you've got a command. And there are certain halachot, laws in Jewish law, that must be followed even when the situation is difficult. And that could mean holding your tongue and maybe distancing yourself from abusive parents, but not to do things against them in a frontal way. You have to... All right, I don't even know if I want to continue on this. Let's leave it open because I can't do it justice, certainly not in the time that I have in this show, and maybe not at all, but there are professionals that can. And I just know that even in an extreme situation, at least extreme religiously, where a parent orders his child to do something which is forbidden in Jewish law, and the child is not allowed to listen to the parent and do the wrong thing, he still cannot be disrespectful in his refusal to do what the parent said. So that's really a different issue. It's not so much Kabeid et Avicha ve'et Imecha, it's more Ish Imo ve'Aviv Tira'u from Parshat Kedoshim. I don't know if we have to get into it now. Another aspect of this before I leave it is the twice used words et. Kabeid et Avicha ve'et Imecha. Now, English does not have an equivalent word for et, because whether you say kabeid avicha, honor your father, or kabeid et avicha, it comes out the same in English. In Hebrew, or specifically in Torah language, the presence of that extra word et indicates on a different level, a level of allusion or hint, to something more than just father and mother being the recipients of your honor. And some say it adds to avicha animecha, your father and your mother, to include your in-laws, to include grandparents, to include, this was my favorite and still is, your older brother. So if avicha is your father and imecha is your mother, then et and et can apply to your teachers, to your grandparents, to your in-laws, and to your big brother. In fact, one of my brothers refers to me as his et. And sometimes he says it in the Ashkenazic pronunciation, and I don't like the sound of it, but I get the point. He takes this seriously, and respect for an older brother is not on the same level as respect for parents, but it's there. And it's something that if you feel it, that's good, but if you don't, the mitzvah still exists. Okay, enough said on that. Let's move on to something else. As I've said many times in the past, the Ten Commandments comes with a consumer warning. Warning not to overdo the veneration of the Ten Commandments, because there are a lot of people out there, Jewish as well as non-Jewish, who are willing to concede that the Ten Commandments were actually divinely presented to the people of Israel at Mount Sinai, but all the rest of the Torah was the invention and creation of Moshe Rabbeinu, Moses the lawgiver. And Judaism, authentic Torah Judaism, says that the Ten Commandments are chapter headings for a wide variety of mitzvot and conduct, which is the body of the mitzvot of the Torah, the 613, and it all comes from God. And therefore, there were moves in Jewish history to make sure that we would not overdo our veneration of the Ten Commandments at the expense of the rest of the Torah. So, for example, we never included the Ten Commandments in daily prayer. The Shema Yisrael, Hear, O Israel, our God, God, our God, God is one, is part of the daily prayer. And the Song of the Sea, Oz Yashir Moshe, is part of the daily prayer. And many passages from Tehillim, Psalms, are part of the daily prayer. But there was apparently a suggestion way back that the Ten Commandments deserve to be recited daily, and it was rejected lest these apostates or scoffers say, aha, look at the honor given the Ten Commandments. There is no movie that I'm aware of with Yul Brynner and Charlton Heston called the 613 Mitzvot. But everybody knows the Ten Commandments, the Big Ten, the Decalogue. In fact, when you listen to the reading of Parshat Yitro this Shabbat, it sounds like that's what we got from God. All you have to do is look at the rest of the episode, which is at the end of next week's Sedra, and you'll see there that the Torah speaks of not only the stone tablets, but the Torah and the mitzvot all came from God to Moshe, and from Moshe to the rest of us. But there is a natural tendency to over-venerate the Ten Commandments, and in many Jewish communities, they try very carefully not to do that, not, God forbid, to lower the status, but to give the rest of the Torah that same kind of honor. There is a controversy, for example, of a very well established, time-honored custom of standing for the Torah reading of the Aseret HaDibrot, especially since the Torah describes the people standing at the foot of Mount Sinai when they first heard the Ten Commandments. And that's a nice thing to do, except if it over-venerates. And therefore, they said, keep it cool, and either stand for everything or don't stand at all. And yet many shuls, most of them, I would say, do place the Ten Commandments on a pedestal, which it deserves. One of the things I like to point out, which sort of puts the Ten Commandments in a certain place, is the fact that it is composed of 13 verses in the Torah, not 10, and it contains 14 mitzvot, not 10, and a 15th mitzvah is added in the second accounting in the Parsha of Vo'etchanan. And the fact that it is the tradition in Jerusalem, not everybody follows this tradition, but the tradition here is to read the Ten Commandments in synagogue this Shabbat in the same tune as all of the Torah is read. Which means when you get up to the Ten Commandments, it reads like part of the rest of the Torah, which it is. on Shavuot morning, the Ten Commandments are read in a different set of Torah notes, which definitely highlights them, because Shavuot is the anniversary of the receiving of the Torah, and the Torah is read in a more dramatic way to reenact and relive the experience. The rest of the world uses that fancier set of notes for every time they read about the Ten Commandments, but something appeals to me about what we call Minhag Yerushalayim, Jerusalem custom, because it gives you a perspective, I believe, exactly the way it should be. The Ten Commandments are special, but they are part of all of Torah. They are the down payment which we received at that day of revelation at Sinai. We heard them. Subsequently, they were presented to the people, engraved in a set of tablets, but those tablets were broken and replaced months later. So it has its place. It is special, but it represents all of Torah, and that shouldn't be forgotten either. The first statement of Aseret HaDibrot is, Anochi Hashem Elokecha, I am the Lord your God who took you out of Egypt, out of the house of bondage. Many people interpret that as being an introduction to what follows. Therefore, as if it says, you shall have no other gods before me. And the rest of the Ten Commandments contain commandments. The first commandment is really a statement. Maimonides, Rambam, and others say, no, it's more. It is a command. It's as if the Torah said, thou shalt believe in God. It doesn't use that language. It makes it very easy to read that not as a command. But then you have Maimonides and those of his ilk who say, this is the command, one of the 613 mitzvot, to believe in God. To believe that he exists, to believe that he created the world, to believe that he remains involved in the functioning of the world, and that he is the one who took us out of Egypt and gave us the Torah, and brought us to the land of Israel, and continues either in an obvious right up front manner or in a behind the scenes way, but he is always, always involved in this world. That is a very important concept of Torah Judaism, and it is presented in the subtle way that you don't necessarily see it when you read the words. You need to learn it. And this goes to something I've said many times and don't have too much time now to dwell upon, and that is the inseparable nature of the written word and the oral law. It's a package deal. Add to that package rabbinic legislation, add to that package custom, and you're getting close to seeing the totality of Jewish law and life. We do not have a lot of time left for this show. Torah Tidbits audio for Parshat Yitro gives me enough time to say, look at the Parsha, which is something I should remind you of every week. Go over the Torah reading. I remember once sitting in Army and looking at the weekly Sedra, and a guy, not religious, came and asked me what I was doing. I told him, he said, didn't you do that last year? I said, yeah, last year, the year before, and the year before that. Every time you do it, you get something new from it. Every shiur you hear, every parsha sheet that you read, you should get something new from it. On that note, I wish you a Shabbat Shalom, Lehishtameah.